Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, Mike Blumenthal, one of my favorite people in the space, the founder and director of local research for Gather Up.
Co-founder.
Mike, one of my favorite people in this space. You were one of those guys early on who focused on local when it was not a sexy topic.
Is there something besides local?
I mean, as far as, no. Right. I mean, it was, but now.
It's all there ever was. It's all there ever will be.
To be fair, when you first started, there was stuff beyond local, and it was like you zeroed in before everybody else realized how cool it was.
It's the tail that's in the process of wagging the dog. I mean, it will become bigger than general search, and it will become the way people think of search going forward, to the point, to the exclusion of other things. I mean, and I see Google moving in this direction aggressively. So they get it finally, and they're putting a lot of their resources into that. So we'll see.
Well, the question, because you've followed this as long as anybody, one of the frustrations for people who geek out on the space like myself, we spend our time, we understand organic, we understand local as it is, and yet spam still permeates it in a way that reminds me of search when we first met, where spam still ruled the day in search. When will Google get its act together and clean this up?
Well, I've been, as you know, focused on map spam for well over 12 years at this point. And I've come to the conclusion that Google doesn't, there's a number of issues going on that all interplay. One, Section 230 provides Google with categorical protection against spam. So there's no legal or structure in which they exist, a regulatory structure that requires them to regulate it. Two, they're a bottom-up engineering company that looks at problems in a different way than most people think about. And in a bottom-up engineering company, engineers do what they are interested in, not what you're interested in. And so projects that take on a life get brought to fruition in a fairly chaotic way internally. They get tested and tried, and if it works and it scales to a gazillion people. But while they're scaling, they don't give much care for real world issues like you. So basically, when our interface interfaces with their interface, what appears to us as chaos is their way of doing business. So they have a style that basically forces them to work on big projects and ignore little details. And then finally, they do this silly analysis basically because from their point of view, Maps is free. And those are, for those of you who are listening, those are air quotes I'm putting around it. They make this arbitrary distinction internally between a free product like Maps and a paid product like ads, although it's hard to tell the difference these days. So they end up rationalizing lack of attention. And then they do the dumbest statistical analysis. They say, one half of 1% of spam is seen. Well, yeah, if you count all the churches and other stuff, it comes down to one half of 1%. But in reality, it's a much bigger percentage because spam is very local and it's very localized in high value categories. So all those things contribute to a company that all they do when they get caught and they get their hand slapped is they say, the spammers are getting smart. It's like whack-a-mole. We're going to have to whack them again this month. And then they do something for 3 or 4 months and then they go back to the way they were doing it. So it's while annoying to you and me, it's admittedly a very profitable strategy. They've grown to be one of the most profitable companies in the world. They obviously don't care about spam the way you and I do.
Is there a potential that they actually like it in that it takes up space from and forces, if three companies could be in, when we met each other, it was seven, but you got three companies fighting for this air quote free space. By allowing spam in, it's forcing you, you're bumped out, you got to go buy ads. Is that part of it, or is it
hard to ascribe maliciousness to incompetence when it should, just basic lack of human caring or lack of human competence? I don't think it's malicious or intentional in the sense that you state, but the fact that the matter is they're unwilling to do, they have whatever it is, 70,000 engineers at this point. The fact that they're unwilling to put two on it permanently says a lot about the company and the way they work. And the fact that they haven't put any money on it and that they deal with it reactively instead of proactively tells you how successful they've been in doing that. They basically view, they don't deal with the problem until the noise really bubbles up into the press. Then they put a few resources on them. And then once the press dies down, they go back to doing it the way they were doing it. This is how they work. And spam is just seen as one of those noise. It's not, you know, it's not the signal, it's the noise. And so they don't care. They don't care about it in the way you care about it. Despite the fact that I can send a scraper out and find 2,000 lead gen listings for insurance in 10 minutes, they don't seem interested in that. So,
right. Well, I mean, look, you've been there. You've been that stalwart, one of the people that does have the ear of people there. You know, when I look at this, I see a couple things, one of which is, you could give them in 5 minutes advice, my guess is, which is, hey, you let websites be in a sandbox for a while. You're not doing that here. 5 reviews in a competitive market. Why are you showing something with 0 or 1 reviews against people that have been in the market for years? There are some basic things that if it was just not complete and utter not caring that they could easily create. I get Exact Match has an issue because some of the relevant places are Exact Match, but it just seems like that the lack of caring in an area, we started the interview saying, is there anything other than local? So they care about user experience, and yet the permeation of spam, are we just gonna have to wait for that New York Times or Wall Street Journal article like we did with the eyeglass store or JCPenney? We're waiting for a seminal article to get to shame Google to make a move?
Well, we've had seminal articles. There was a very significant article about drug rehab abuses and the pain and suffering that drug rehab abuse caused. Google partnered up with a not-for-profit that cataloged every legitimate drug rehab center in the United States and then vetted that information against Google. Google vetted their information against the list. And then that was in 2015, 2016. And then not 6 months ago, maybe 2017, not 6 months ago, we saw the influx of thousands of Google drug rehab spam listings. You know, they don't view it as a problem because they don't view it. They view it only at scale as it compares to the greater database set. So if they have 125 million business listings in the world and maybe 17 million in the United States, and they have 300,000 or 400,000 or 500,000 spam listings that don't show very often in search by their analysis, they don't see that as a problem. It is a problem. I get it's a problem. But I stopped recommending ideas to them because, again, they have 90, 80,000 engineers working for them. They're smart enough or smarter to be able to come up with solutions. What they don't have is a way to identify it as a legitimate problem worthy of ongoing resolution. And that's an institutional issue and it's a regulatory issue. The only thing that's going to change this isn't the article in the New York Times, because I've had numerous articles in the New York Times. Like I said, it happens. They fix a few. I've had articles in the CBC in Canada. They fix it for a little bit and then the stuff comes back. And this has been going on for 12 years where you'd get a high profile article in different verticals and in different levels of national news. It would go away for 6 months and then it would come back. The pattern is what's important. It's only going to change if there's regulatory oversight, either a change in Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which gives them more obligation to take this down once reported, and or antitrust regulations that puts this at the forefront, because in a sense, it's fake news. This is as bad as anything that Facebook does propagating bad stories. This propagates, an illegitimate listing, probably with illegitimate reviews, into a consuming marketplace that's not sophisticated. They don't even know that they're, calling a spammer or a fake location. But we're in a legal environment, which fake locations aren't illegal. I mean, you know about the law. You can tell me, but why isn't that illegal? It should be. It's a form of advertising deception, and yet as far as I can tell there's no laws against it.
No, it's very, and look, I've seen it go full circle. When I started practicing, Virginia did not allow virtual offices. they had to go that way because the practice of law, legitimate lawyers were using Regis's for their practice. They didn't need an office full time. It was a cost effective way to do business. You know, and what we have seen, I'll give Google credit almost too much. They have done their best to wipe out virtual offices for the most part. They've actually put some effort into it, very often taking out legitimate ones with it. That's sort of the cost of doing business, I get. But that's the one area where I've seen a little bit of work. It's just the amount of effort it takes to flag something like that is pretty astronomical. And the flood keeps coming.
Right. I these days when I'm working on spam, I try to work on spam at scale.
Right.
Because I figured if I can point out to Google a large network, maybe they could figure out how that network extends and kill more spam. And WhiteSpark actually built me a tool that allows me, that uses a technique I developed to find spam. And it allows me to easily and quickly find large scale spam occurrences. So when I'm doing spam work, which I do still as a hobby on occasion, I try to do it at scale and then escalate it. But
is this a mic only tool or is this something part of the
WhiteSpark? It's a mic only tool that, you know, it's very crude at this point. At some point it may roll into the WhiteSpark
platform
suite, but right now it's a mic only tool that helps me find large scale spam.
Well, they like your
local. Who else in the world has this as a hobby, I would ask?
Second tier hobbyist in this space. I get it, you know, at night. And it goes, you know, what's really fascinating is to see the spammers very often going one step below the major words. There's definitely spam at the top words, no argument. But the place where I see it proliferating is one or two terms in where there's significant traffic, but not the primary traffic, where people don't have the resources to fight it. You know, seeing it in comp over injury, where there's a lot less resources going into it. Those areas have just been flooded.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that it's in the working trades like locksmiths, garage door, moving, roofing, but it's also you don't see it a whole lot in accountants, but you see it everywhere in lawyers. I find that interesting. It speaks a little bit to
B2C space. It's, you know, I think that if there's somebody buying the leads, whether it be insurance, for-profit education, or locksmiths, those are people that, you know, people turn to search. That's why it's so powerful.
Right. Yeah, right. If the lead value is high enough, there's spam for sure.
You know, the interesting thing since you and I have spoken last, you know, is the advent of the local service ads. One of my thoughts was, why is that green check mark not being used as a Trump factor? You're going through a Pinkerton background check. Want to get your thoughts on what you see with LSA, where you think it's going?
I saw it as a response to their inability to really cope with spam or to want to cope with spam, put some monetary value on it. To create a process which could elevate a business to a little higher level of trust. And they now are selling that trust level, right? You can now get in some markets, in some industries, get a badge for $50 a month.
That legal is fully built out at this point. We are.
But what we're seeing is abuses there that are unregulated as well, right? Again, they built this whole system on top of ads, on top of local. They should have expected spam. They could have expected spam. They could have built in systems to prevent spam, and yet it's rapidly filling up with spam. So again, what does that tell you about Google? It tells you they don't give a shit. So, you know.
It seems that when Google wants something, if they, it goes back to what you said, if they cared, you know, they figured out link spam. They did a pretty good job. I mean, it still works and people do it, but it's not the way it was, you know, 7-8 years ago. This is one of those ones that it would take a lot less from where I'm sitting for them to do something about this. Where do you see, do you think that one of the things that's always been sort of the ultimate dagger to organic SEO would be a paid 3-pack. Do you think that the 3-pack will be paid at some point?
Well, I don't like to work in specific future predictions. I sort of look at the big picture here. Google is either wants data or to be paid, one or the other. And when you look at trends in local, what you see are several large trends. One is the move towards visual search in most shopping categories. Big trend is towards, you know, intelligently bringing in images that relate to the query, whether they're product searches or service searches. Another big trend is towards a transaction, right? So they are on a vertical by vertical basis, developing the call to action that leads to some sort of transaction. Get a quote, make an appointment, reserve a table. So that's another big trend. The other third is that they are moving a lot of discovery into Google Maps, right? So in that context, Google has the demands of every capitalist company to return, provide greater returns to their stockholders. And if there's a finite amount of space and the returns have to go up, either the price of the ad goes up or the volume of the ads go up. So I don't know that all three will be taken, but you can bet that more and more surfaces will have ads. And how it looks, I couldn't say, but the demands of the market are such, Google is funding all of their other moonshots with ad revenue. And so they're going to maximize ad revenue as much as they can.
Absolutely. Let's pivot to reviews. You know, you've spent your last few years playing in that sandbox, for the first time, we actually saw the acknowledgement that the number mattered. What do you see? What's the future of reviews? It's one of those areas that spam is filling up. At the same time, legitimate businesses have to stay in step with it. You know, where are we and where are we going?
Well, I think most actors in the review space, businesses, view it in a very limited way. They view it as one more review to compare themselves with a guy down the street that has one less review. When I look at reviews, I try to look at it from the marketing and management point of view. So I view it much more broadly. That first and foremost, reviews are a way to listen to your customers, understand what they're thinking, and to act on it through management insights, and then to market, creating what John Jantz calls the hourglass of marketing, where somebody comes in, they find you, maybe due to reviews, they come to your business, they call, they're happy. And you, at the beginning of your interaction with them, you say to them, look, we expect you to be satisfied, and we're gonna ask you at the end that you will, whether you were, and will you, you know, kindly give us that feedback? Yes. So they write a review, which then drive, and they are happy. So they get driven back through the hourglass to come back into your business. And they write a review, so other people get driven through the hourglass to come back into your business. So a review plays a critical role in running a great business. But a review isn't just a review of Google. Google doesn't care where the review is. They don't care if the review's at Yelp or at any other site they can scrape, even the Yellow Pages or the Better Business Bureau. They don't care. From a ranking point of view, from an understanding of your business point of view, they'll look everywhere. Businesses, though, and Google's needs are different. And a business needs to maximize their interaction with their customers to create this flow to grow their business. One review at Google may drive a new customer into your business, but it does nothing to keep the customer into that loop or for them to recommend you to other customers. So in the end, only through a business doing these other things, i.e. improving, and then using reviews and marketing, can they ever extract full value of a review. So for me, that's a long answer to say that reviews go way beyond Google reviews. For example, Facebook reviews. Well, aren't that many people looking at reviews on Facebook, but what's interesting about Facebook is it's the only place you can have a conversation around your review, right? Yelp reviews still have some value. They don't send a lot of leads, but they do, you know, factor into your reputation at Google. They also factor into your rank at Google, send value there. But as Google sort of eats the long tail of local search and all these review companies sort of decline, Yelp and Facebook, then you have a choice as a business to become totally dependent on Google for reviews, where, as you pointed out, there are problems, or to own your own digital asset in the form of reviews. To me, owning your own reviews is the best way to is a great alternative strategy to complement your Google review strategy, i.e. get reviews yourself from your customers. One, you'll get them in much greater numbers, because in any business, if 10% of your customers are willing to leave you a Google review, 30% or 40% are willing to give you a direct review. These direct reviews are more honest, they give you a better sense of how you're doing, so they actually contribute more to the hourglass flow of helping improve your business. With that much more data, you can have much better analytics about what's going on in your business. And then you can develop a whole range of great marketing around these reviews, using them for social proof, using them for social posts, using them for content on your pages. One of the problems in local is generating great page content. Well, it's hard. You're busy. You're running your business, so you don't have great page content. Let your consumers, with this high volume of reviews, both Google's and first parties, let them flow to your pages, right? Which page? Well, whichever page the review speaks about. With enough volume of reviews, you can actually look at the reviews, automatically tag them. So if you want a review around motorcycle injuries that mentions motorcycle injuries, the software now can find that review, post it on your motorcycle injury page. So reviews can be used for management and marketing, as well as all these other things. But it only makes sense if you sort of look outside the Google narrow focus that most people have. Not to say that Google is important. You get your Google reviews in order. Once you do that, then you move on to the bigger picture of getting your review house in order in terms of management and marketing. So it to me is a much richer story than getting one more freaking Google review. Who gives a shit? Well, I mean, I do. You know, you do. But, no,
but that's the irony. Like, I'm smiling as you're saying this, because okay, assume for a second you're dealing with a legit business. You know, you've worked with them before in the non-legal space, in the legal space. There are places they're doing all the right stuff. Ironically, it was what they now banned with gateway pages, which was getting the review up front, and then only pushing to Google once you had one that you love. So one of the ironies of the elimination of gateway pages is that whole practice of a pre-review being used sort of got hammered down.
Research though indicates what you're talking about is gating, right? Where a user is given a choice. If they give you a negative, they're not taken to a Google page, they give you a positive page. My research though indicated, I looked at a large number of reviews in a fairly boring industry, insurance. And what we had a very interesting use case, because they shut off gating one day to the next when Google said, let's shut off gating. And we looked at 100,000 reviews with gating versus our 100,000 user interactions versus 100,000 user interactions after gating. And what we found was after no gating, yeah, right? So they moved from gating to no gating, large number of users, roughly 100,000 both situations. And what we found was that with no gating, their rating dropped infinitesimally small amount. Not even, I don't think it was statistically valid amount. It was like 4.6 to 4.58 or something. Not a big drop across hundreds of 100,000 asks. But what happened was their review volume went through the roof, sky high. So gating, which we all thought businesses needed. Consumers,
right. I get it.
Consumers don't like it, apparently, and you do better without it. So getting rid of gating to me was a good thing, because it improved the flow, and consumers are not stupid. I mean, some of them may be, but only as stupid as the businesses that are asking them. And, you know, some are smart. Most of them are smart. Most of them get that you're trying to prevent them from leaving bad review. It didn't work. If you're if your company sucked, it sucked, and you still got bad reviews.
Right.
You know, so to me, the beauty of reviews is putting in place a system that can leverage them in all of their richness to understand how your business is doing, to be able to respond effectively to them, to understand how your competitor's doing, and then to use all those in the most powerful marketing ways you can find, dusting off all the old reviews from 2015, 2016, and reusing them over and over again in your marketing automatically on pages and in social posts, that kind of stuff.
Any advice for people who are going up against the juggernaut in a market that is using review spam, using dubious techniques to get the count up?
To me, one, businesses that run like that have a short lifespan. You know, I've run across them my whole life, and in the end, and tended to not worry too much about them because they tend to burn themselves out. Reviews, from where I sit, are much like long-term customer relations and long-term customer satisfaction plans is a lifelong issue. It's a 5, a 10, a 20-year issue in your business. What does your customer think, and are they willing to share that with the public? And this was true before reviews existed, and after Google reviews stop existing, this will still be true. And so clearly you can document them and report them to Google. You can make your system as efficient as possible. But in the end, all you can do is worry about you and your business and honestly deal with the issues that are preventing you from improving. Yeah. And right, improve.
Yeah. But then, this is the frustration you see, which is, look, very often when I go on Amazon to buy something, I just want to know there's X number of reviews out there so that some number of people, it's the same widget I'm buying from each of three different places. Number does matter at some level. We've seen stuff as bad as people at a state fair handing out prizes to get reviews. Somebody identifies that in a review. Is there a mechanism that you've seen successful in getting that identified, or is this another area that Google's like, they just want the user generated content, they could care less
if, what it says? If you provide Google with proof of incentives, they will take the reviews down. They'll take the reviews down. You have to provide Google with proof of incentives. Is life long enough? I'm not sure. Again, it exists in the cowboy world that in which we live of capitalism, which for some reason, regulatory environment's very weak. So there's no FTC cases have increased over the years, doubled every year for the last few years. But enforcement is very weak nationally, very weak on a state level. Somehow capitalism in all of its forms, including illicit ones, seems to be revered, whereas behaviors that should be illegal are not. So you have to understand that some of this you can't do much about because it's the context. I mean, you're up against a wave of business interests that make it difficult to get in place consumer-friendly policies in this matter. But you can report them. You can take some of your time to do it. And I think I tend to favor, in terms of how to spend my time in improving potential reach in search, I think I'd rather spend my time getting spam listings taken down, which will take down a lot of fake reviews, rather than spending too much time on fake reviews, just because it opens up spots and allows you to move up. But if you find incentives, you certainly can report them to Google through the, they do have the private reporting mechanism. If you do want to report in the form, you have to be a little careful because you don't want to divulge your name. So you need to use an alias so you don't get in trouble. Some of these spammers, I believe, some of the spam is coming out of illegal activity, part of larger, more illegal groups. So you have to be a little careful in terms of being too public about it. But if you can get your information to Google, either through the redressal form, with documentation in a spreadsheet, or through the forum, then Google will take them down.
I'm curious, on a personal level, have you had any of these bad actors try to come? You've been pretty vocal and done a lot of work in this space.
A few times, one guy came at me and told me he was going to ruin my reputation. And if you search, obviously his strategy was to write crazy ass articles about me, thinking that they would somehow rank. But the top two pages have been fairly visible in this industry. So the top two pages about me are obviously,
as an SEO, I'm very proud. Like, I'm glad to see that.
But if you dig deep enough on Mike Blumenthal review scam or something, you'll find these articles about me, and they're laughable. It's like, who cares? It's Like, go ahead right away, waste your time. I'm more than happy to have you do that. I have had a few friends who are agencies who did not have as much cover as I do have some of their customers attacked, which was why Google put in place the redressal form, which is private, because these attacks were, you know, detrimental to the, not so much the agency, but to their clients.
Gotcha. Well, look, as in our final minutes here before we wrap up, we're you know, you've identified a lot of these things. If you're sort of sitting here and, you know, as a business owner, what are some of the things that you would be focused on going forward based on where you perceive Google with local headed?
So Google is working very hard to create an immersive environment that people can't leave. Whether they charge for that or they don't charge for that, a lot of times they don't charge for it. So I see that you have to create an environment that's visually very appealing to speak to this trend I spoke of before, where you can, it doesn't matter where the consumer interacts with you, at Google, on your website, there's enough information there for them to be converted and for you to look better than the competitor. So a huge emphasis on great images, a huge emphasis on both your website and on Google My Business, a great emphasis on complete and compelling data in both places, an emphasis on high quality, trusted, verifiable, you know, reviews that can be shared across your website, across Google, across all social. But if you look at the trends as immersion, keeping people at Google, higher reliance on imagery and a call to action to get the sale at Google, I think you need to lean into all of those trends, as well as maintaining your website, because your website feeds a lot of the data to Google. Reviews are obviously critical. I think bigger picture, though, to me, is always that creating a business that truly cares about the customers and puts in place systems that make these tactics secondary to the systems that care for the customers. Because in the end, I think the spammers burn out. They are bright lights for a time, but cheating usually catches up with people sooner or later. And I think that creating long-term sustainable relationships with your clients is the best defense against all these tactics. And then these just become things you do.
Look, I'm coming from a perspective, I work in the legal vertical, where like I'm assuming great lawyer and great customer service. The question is, you know, assuming that, but let me conclude, because you talked about something in the WhiteSpark presentation to the other day. If you're sitting there currently and you're looking at your GMB at your local, trying to get yourself to the 3-pack, of the factors that are out there, what are the 2 or 3 that you'd put your thumb on? And which are the 2 or 3 that you'd say, yes, they're there, but it's probably not ROI time or effort wise right now?
So I sent out a tweet last week, you probably saw it, was about 10 factors in ranking. And I billed the tweet as up-to-date information. The post was written in 2007. Things have not fundamentally changed since then. So to me, the things that work are a great website with great internal linking, external linking to the website, great reviews. That all works.
Understood. I'm taking the next post, photos, video, 360 tour. Like, what are the things that like?
Well, very few of those things impact rank. They do impact what I call, you know, conversion optimization. If you assume that local is very local and people are going to see you 3, 4, 5 miles from your location, then the question is, do you look better than the competitors in that 3, 4, 5 mile radius? And all those things help with that. Now, to some extent, posts, ads, you know, they use posts to justify showing a listing of surface post content. But for the most part, very few of the things at Google will impact rank, but they will impact conversions. What's more important?
I'm going to focus right now. Understanding conversion, get it, right? But if you're looking simply, like somebody saying, I want to have the better chance of being in the three-pack, is it all organic factors or is there anything within the GMB ecosystem that gives you, in your opinion, a better chance than others?
A great business name, a great category, physical relationship to your customers, great internal linking on your website, great external linking to your website, a great review program, not just at Google, across the web. Those are the things that will still work, have always worked, and those are the things that are going to move the needle the most. The rest of it, as far as I can tell, has minimal impact. Now, there's one thing that I think has an impact on local ranking that most people are not doing, if you're looking for a tip as to where to be that others are not, and that is public relations. I think great articles in news press have tremendous impact, even if they don't link to you. In local, Google is able to identify an article about your company in the Washington Post, the New York Times, or whatever newspaper they're looking at, and identify it with you. And I've seen tremendous ranking gains coming from articles. This was in a very competitive market, San Francisco. They got some good art press in the San Francisco Chronicle. We saw incredible ranking gains from that. So great PR would be the one thing that I think people aren't doing that could be done in addition to all the other things that I think move the needle. Beyond that, you know, filling in services, filling in your description, doing posts, you know, do not have tremendous impact, if any, on your rank. So, but I think you should do them anyways.
And the final thing, are there any things that you sort of see people doing that you sort of like, you sort of internally laugh at saying, hey, I'm pretty sure this is spinning wheels, may make you feel better, but you really feel it's not much of a...
Yeah, all the hooey about geocoding images is one. It's just hooey. It doesn't hold up to any critical analysis. The other is that there was long been this thing in the Black local community about linking to your Google CID causing a ranking gain, also hooey. You know, there's one about my maps, creating my maps, concentric rings, and my maps doing something, again, hooey. You know, give me a couple others. I'm sure there's more.
Yeah, hooey out there. We're going to have a new website, hooey or not hooey.
Right. The reality is that the things that matter have long stayed the same. Don't change much year to year. There are no silver bullets. There's no things that, other than great execution in each of those things, right? A great business name, a great website, you know, a solid linking plan that is real links. I mean, generating links because you deserve them, not because you want them. And then great internal linking, great reviews. That stuff all helps. We know it helps. And doing those better and more consistently really comes down to doing them more consistently. And then good articles about your business. These are, Google's trying to emulate the real world. And these are things that are in the real world. And if you can do them a little better, then the next company it's going to show up.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time. You've been an inspiration to me personally. From the first time I met you, you've always helped keep me on the straight and narrow, and you know,
not straight and narrow. It's a broad path.
I know, but there's so much hooey out there.
It's just looking for the big picture rather than the minutiae, rather than the you know, dog poo that's stuck in my waffle shoe. You know, you're looking for the real important things, and to me, the important things are the customer, right? So. It's an issue of keeping focused.
Absolutely. And you've been great at that. And thank you for that mentorship and leadership over the years. Hopefully we get to meet again in person sooner rather than later.
Yeah. You can go now for 2 or 3 more years and ignore my advice.
That's not true. I follow it. I read it. I take it to heart. So thank you again. Great seeing you.
Thanks for having me. And be safe out there. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.